And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels, episode number 154, playoff episode number 12. It's Tuesday, October 13th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, Britt Ciroli. To be honest, I actually don't know what day it is anymore when we record or even between recordings or when I'm watching a game. No clue what day it is. I know Sundays are clear because there's a lot of football on starting at noon my time. Otherwise, couldn't tell you what day it is because I'm just dizzy and confused, but I'm enjoying it because there's good baseball each and every day. We saw game two of the ALCS. We're going to start there today. Manuel Margot was the story. Not only did he hit a big home run in that game, but he also made probably the catch of the postseason. I think we could probably say that versus Cody Bellinger's catch in the last round is a fair toss-up, and I think Margot surviving his catch is probably a testament to some kind of miracle or something. I don't know how he didn't come away with an injury today, but he did it.
Yeah, did he get concussion protocol, I wonder? Because just the way that happened, like, that was my first reaction, I guess.
Yeah, Willie Adames said in the Zooms that that Margot was bleeding.
Yeah.
And that he was really worried for him. And then I guess they apparently went into the, not the clubhouse, but like up the tunnel a little bit. And somebody asked Kevin Cash afterwards in the Zoom, like, you know, was he going to come out of the game? And Kevin Cash was like, no, he was not coming out of the game. So I think unclear if they did the concussion protocol, unclear, like, what is wrong with Margot, but he definitely, that was a really nice catch. Reminded me a little bit of Eloy Jimenez's catch in the Futures game in the same place, but this one was even more because there's more on the line, just, you know, balls to the wall, like, went over the wall and topsy-turvy and legs up in the air and just a beautiful, beautiful play.
Yeah. I mean, was it as good of a catch as the Cody Bellinger catch? No, I think it was better. How many times do you see a guy literally flip over a wall or into the stands, right? You don't really see that. They were both huge moments, but, you know, what's interesting to me, and, you know, you've been on all the Ray Zooms, but what a great story Margot is. I mean, his dad died of COVID, which I didn't know. His rental car, like, set ablaze with his family inside of it, and they had to pull his kids out. Like, talk about a guy. I mean, we could talk all day long about catch probability. Like, talk about a guy who has been through some stuff to now be on this big stage on a small market team that no one's really paid attention to until now, to hit the home run and to have that catch. I mean, it's just awesome. This is why I love the postseason, right? I really had no idea about him at all until today. Like, I knew he existed. I knew he played on the Rays. But this is why I love the postseason, is you see these, like, random guys, and Tampa Bay is obviously full of them, and then you learn more about them, and now you're like, damn, I'm a Margot fan for life. I don't care where he go, I'm behind Margot, you know? I mean, been waiting to use that.
Yeah, that was pretty legendary. The, you know, it's funny too, because he wasn't that good, and he hasn't ever been league average with a bat. You know, I think they just took him because Kiermaier is kind of falling off a little bit. And if you look at Margot against lefties, he is above average. So I think that they just kind of bought him to be a platoon center fielder. And, you know, they bought two of those with Renfroe and him, and just, you know, they hoped that maybe one of them would be a full-time guy. I didn't think Margot would be the guy that would get more playing time than Renfroe. I didn't think Margot would hit a big home run, and I didn't think Margot would hit a big home run off a righty As supposedly better against lefties. I didn't think he would hit a big home run off of Lance McCullers, and I did not think he would hit a big home run off of Lance McCullers, who was in the middle of shoving.
Yeah, I really feel bad.
Yeah, Charlie Morton after the game was like, no, he pitched better. It's like, he was good. I don't know, I just got lucky. He's like, my teammates picked me up. You know, if you look at Charlie Morton, there's like 405 plus balls that he allowed in terms of exit velocity. But one thing that was a little bit interesting, all the hardest hit balls had single digit launch angles or less. So, he broke the sinker out more. I thought Charlie Morton's was underrating himself. He does that. He's a really nice guy, and he doesn't overrate himself at the very least. But I thought that using the two-seamer today was brilliant. He used a lot of the two-seamer for called strikes. And he got two today called strikeouts on the two-seamer, on the front door two-seamer. He hadn't done that in 2 years. He had zero in the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, Derek's Astros now are in big trouble here. And I'm going to call them Derek's Astros because for those of you tuning in, Derek predicted that the Astros would win. We on this show, of course, do not gloat at all. About when people are wrong.
Unless they expose our wrongnesses in the past.
Then
no
we
one
fight
look at
you.
My bracket.
Let's keep in mind that I have run a fantastic reverse jinx with my predictions to this point. So maybe I'm just harnessing the power that I've recently discovered and doing it for the greater good. So you're welcome. But Lance McCullers did pitch really well. 20 swinging strikes, 11 Ks. He threw 100 pitches. A late home run that he gave up to Mike Zunino was kind of the one tactical decision that I wasn't sure about because he was up in the high 90s with his pitch count at the time that that happened. That put the Rays up 4-1. As we saw how the game came to an end, like the Astros had a chance to actually make this really interesting, and they still do. I think they could still reel off four in a row. Come on, I said Astros in six. I'm sticking by it, but this was the kind of game you have to win. If you get a performance like that from Lance McCullers, where you only use one reliever, Andre Scrub came on and threw one inning, so he protected the bullpen. You're probably going to need a lot of relievers with Urquidy going in game three. This set you up really well bullpen-wise. If you're Houston, you had a chance against Nick Anderson, and you didn't capitalize, so it's absolutely a huge missed opportunity for the Astros in this series, given the performance of McCullers.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because Eno, you said this, I think, yesterday, that in game one, that the Astros had the best game they could imagine, and they still lost. And I was thinking about that today, because they did it again. Like, Lance McCullers was great. I'm glad you brought up Anderson DVR, because he looked human. They loaded the bases. They had chances. And we can all agree that home run by Margot was great, but it was only set up because Jose Altuve had, like, the yips after making no errors all year. I think Jason Stark, the great Jason Stark, had a great stat. I think it was 194 or something like that. Throwing chances. Then he makes pretty much two in within the span of, you know, several minutes, it felt like.
Wait, I want to parse this for a second. Do you think that Yuli Gurriel had nothing to do with that?
No, I wonder.
It wasn't a good stretch.
Yeah, I've long thought this. Why is it only one person who gets an error on a bad play? If that both could guys be a team error.
Yeah, that was not, like, G-Man Choi was flashing glove brilliance today, doing a lot of stretching. He does the splits, I do not. And Yuli Gurriel did not look like he does the splits. He did not flash the same sort of ability. But another thing I was thinking about when I was looking at McCullers and Morton today was, going into this, McCullers was, like, at the end of the season, he stopped throwing the changeup. Here are the final four starts of the season. He had 11% changeups, 8% changeups, 12%, 1%. Like, he stopped throwing the changeup. And then in this game, he threw the changeup 28 times. He threw it as much as he threw his fastball. And then on the other side, Charlie Morton, like, he made his bones as, like, a four-seam guy, right? Like, he used to be a two-seam guy, and then he went to the Astros, and they're like, no, four-seam curve, and that's all you need. He, like, threw the sinker a ton today. And so I feel like I wonder if, and you never get anybody to admit this, but I wonder if pitchers that, like, you know, think about the postseason, or like think about six starts from now. They're like, six starts from now, I'm going to see this team again. Today, I'm going to use a bunch of changeups just to F with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I listened to the radio broadcast for the Rays for a while because I love Dave and Andy. And they were just stunned with the way McCullers was pitching. They were like, there's no rhyme or reason to the game plan. He's totally unpredictable. And that clearly, similar to game one with Valdez a little bit, that clearly seems to be Houston's playbook here against the Rays, is to totally abandon what you have done in the past, which sounds insane, but it's worked.
That's what Bauer said when we did the breaking code breaker thing. He said the only thing you can do against a team that is this well prepared is to not do anything you've ever done before. He's like, I threw pitches to Michael Brantley that I have never thrown Michael Brantley. And I've faced him like X amount of times. But I was like, you know what? He's not prepared for this because I've never done this before.
Right.
Didn't you say he had a change-up sequence against him or something? He had some combination he'd never even thrown before to Brantley that was really odd. And
he did something similar to Springer, too, where he threw a 3-2 changeup. And Springer tried to swing out of his, he thought it was a fastball. He swung out of his shoes and he looked back at Bauer like, what the hell was that? because, you know, Bauer doesn't throw that many changeups. To throw it on 3-2 is just crazy talk. So, yeah, I think there was a little bit of like, let's just be erratic and crazy and nobody can sit on any one pitch. And it really worked for McCullers. It's a beautiful curveball.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the whiff numbers. We mentioned CSW. I think that was on yesterday's pod that you brought that up. The called strikes plus whiffs, 50% on the knuckle curve, 36% on the changeup, 33% on the cutters he was throwing. I mean, just outstanding across the board. You, again, couldn't ask for more. I'm thinking about arsenals, though, and you've talked a lot on this show about the importance of having a third pitch or even a fourth pitch and how much that adds. How difficult is it to take those pitches away and then dust them off in a game situation? If you are trying to play chess over multiple matchups, you're trying to kind of steer the advanced scouting in the wrong direction by taking a few things away. Is it really that easy to just go back to something? You got to work out on the side, basically, to have it ready to go.
It's going to get you in trouble eventually, you know? Like just with the Bauer changeup. Like, if Springer hadn't swung, it probably would have been a walk because he doesn't command that changeup well because he doesn't throw very much. So, yeah, and I think the thing with McCullers, too, is the same thing. Like, he can't command the changeup very much, so usually he doesn't use it. But either he had good command of it today or they were just swinging a lot. Let's see what the answer is on that.
By the way, I'm looking at the Rays' bullpen usage, and it was Pete Fairbanks who went two behind Charlie Morton. That was kind of a big deal. They went Loop for two outs. They went Ryan Thompson for one, and then it was Nick Anderson, not himself.
That was the only sort of, the door is slightly ajar moment for the Rays.
Their defense was outstanding across the board today.
Adames was really good.
Yeah, which is why if you're the Astros, you're kind of like, what else can we do? Like, did you guys see, like, Springer in the ninth, the base is loaded, hits the ball right on the nose, and it's a double play. I mean, if you're the Astros, like, it's almost tougher to regroup from these than from total blowouts because you feel like you could have very easily have been up 2-0. The Rays haven't hit. Kind of lost in all this is that the Rays haven't really hit at all. And again, they're just now sitting very pretty. And it seems like, I don't know if the bullpen is just that terrific or if every move Kevin Cash makes, if he's just really, really good at roster management with this bullpen, but it just seems like Tampa Bay, Houston's going to have a real hard time toppling them now. I mean, for Derek's prediction to come true, we're going to have to see some crazy, crazy stuff go down. And it has happened before. It's not unprecedented. But you look at those seven-game series, when a team falls behind, the 2-0, it really seems to be the sucker punch, which is why, to me, tonight's game was so important for the Braves to kind of be able to topple the Dodgers, because that's going to be a seven-game series, I think. Even if the Dodgers win, I think Atlanta tonight, by winning that game 5-1, surprised a lot of people, though it really shouldn't be a surprise, right? They're not this, like, smoke show, right? They're not a cheap mirror parlor trick. They're a really good team.
No, they're legit, and they absolutely belong there. There's one more thing in this Houston game I want to mention. Alex Bregman may have had the best 0-for-5 I've ever seen. He had 5 hard hit balls. 5.
Dude, he averaged like 101.
That's a great point.
That's insane to hit the ball that hard 5 times and come away with nothing. And you see it in the XBA column. The Astros, of course, had 10 hits in the game, only scored the 2 runs. They had a 357 XBA today. The Rays had a 167. So sometimes it just doesn't
Randy
fall
Rosarena
your way.
Randy Arozarena had 3 hard hits and 2 hits. You know? And I don't know. Yeah, it was a tough night for them. Even Dusty afterwards said, you know, we had a lot of hard hits according to StatCast, but, you know, there's not a lot of time for those to start dropping in. So
Dusty said that.
2020 Dusty rules. He's the best version of Dusty yet.
Yeah.
StatCast Dusty.
Yeah. He also referenced Camus. So
I heard. Oh god.
Yeah, some people are geeking out about that. It's been
I love him.
I can't.
It's been quite the turnaround. But again, Astros in 6. I've never been wrong about anything in the postseason ever.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, it was opening day and all these players were coming in with their opening day drip. And I'm never going to look like Ellie De La Cruz and be 6'6" with that body. So I'm not going to pull off that look. But I was really jealous of all these guys with their fitted shirts. I love the way a fitted shirt looks. So I went to Inoshino.com and got my own fitted shirt. And, you know, I got a nice flannel. I wore it to the live podcast that we did in New York and got some compliments on it. You know, what's really cool is you go through this experience where you get to, you know, customize the lapels, the linings, the monograms, the pocket flaps, anything you want. If it's a suit or a shirt, you give them your measurements and you get a shirt that fits you perfectly. It's bespoke without this like big price tag. $89 for fitted shirts. Suits start at $499. Just really high quality stuff. So whether it's opening day and you're at the ballpark and you're trying to interview a ball player, or you just want to look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor, when you wear Indochino, you go to Indochino.com today and use the code RATES to get 10% off of any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code RATES.
Let's move on to that Braves-Dodgers matchup, though. As you said, Britt, really important for the Braves to get off to a good start. We mentioned the starting pitching matchups. The further into the series you go, the more that favors the Dodgers. The Braves got exactly what they needed from Max Fried. I think it's helping Atlanta, and it's helped really each team that's faced Walker Buehler so far, that he's clearly dealing with some command issues as a result of that blister problem on his hand, right? He's still walking a lot of guys, and the pitch count gets run up. He was out after 5, struck out 7, but walked 5, only allowed 1 run. It was the solo home run in the first inning to Freddie Freeman. But for Walker Buehler to only go 5, it opened the door for that bullpen a little bit sooner, and they answered the call. Brusdar Graterol came in, pitched well. Dustin May loaded the bases and left. Victor Gonzalez got a huge strikeout. That was a big moment to kind of keep the Dodgers in it. But then it was Blake Treinen who got roughed up. Austin Riley led off that inning with a home run. Braves tacked on a few more in that inning as well. And it's just unfamiliar territory. We've said this a few times. It's the situation that for years the Dodgers would have turned to Kenley Jansen, right? Home team, tie game. Jansen would have been the guy. You come win the game in the bottom of the inning, game over. And who was going to get that call was a big question. Treinen is absolutely deserving. He is a high-quality reliever, and I think he just made a couple of mistakes, and the Braves punished him for it. I don't really know if there's much more of an explanation than that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems too early to kind of just go out and bash the bullpen already, right? Because you're right, he's the guy. My issue, if you're the Dodgers, is you scored 1 run, and you're going to have to do better than that. Atlanta, they were lucky, as you mentioned, DVR. They were lucky Atlanta didn't have more than 1 run early on. I mean, it was kind of like the case with Houston. A lot of hard hit balls, a lot of base runners on all day. Atlanta just seemed like it was only a matter of time before their offense scored again. The Dodgers never really seemed that way, I guess, especially when you get to that bullpen. You're seeing how good that Braves bullpen is. Yes, the Dodgers have some good relievers, but the Braves, the depth of that bullpen, and, you know, we spoke with Dave O'Brien, the Braves writer, earlier today. He's been covering the Braves forever, and he said, you know, I've never seen a bullpen for Atlanta this deep, and I think watching him, you know, you have to agree. They've got so many guys who can come out there and shut the door. I loved how Melanson caught that home run in the bullpen, then goes out and gets the win. I just think they're a fun, excitable team. You see Ozuna doing the gestures, and, you know, they're just a really fun team. They're not the Padres, but let's make no mistake, there's a lot of energy and a lot of spirit and a lot of fun watching Atlanta play the game. I think even if this game had continued 1-1 for several innings, it was really only a match. It was set up for Atlanta to win, and they had to win this game.
That was my impression too. As you got Chris Martin, Will Smith, Mark Melanson, and you know, you're kind of doing the, like, you're trying to play along and be like, who comes next, you know? And like, you're like, oh, Darren O'Day and this and that, you know. Once Dustin May came out, you realized, I think that from usage patterns, you can kind of realize how much the Dodgers or the manager, Dave Roberts, trust their bullpen. Because if they trusted their bullpen more, Dustin May would start, because you could use him to start because there are no off days and you need a starter in 4 or 5, right? So now what you've done is you said, no, May is a reliever for us and we need him. And so we got Gratterall, May, Victor Gonzalez. That's the A team, right? You got the Dodgers A team and they did well. Although I will also point out, Brusdar Gratterall came on to face the bottom of the order. I don't know why they felt they needed to use Gratterall to get Nick Markakis out, but they did. Then you use Dustin May, you use Victor Gonzalez. That's the A team. Trinan comes on. He's part of the A team, but that's it. You know, that's the end of the A team if you ask me. You know, Jake McGee wasn't used in the postseason before this, and we saw why, kind of. I mean, you know, I think that he was walking a fine line this year. And then generally, on top of that, I think usage helps you kind of realize who the good relievers are. Because otherwise, we're talking about a 60-game sample. You know, we're talking about, you know, people being optioned up and down, people being injured, people being healthy and then not healthy. So looking at like a full season bullpen number and saying, oh, the Dodgers were fourth best in strikeouts minus walks, that's great. They have a really healthy organization with a lot of guys they can bring up and down. And that doesn't mean that they really trust more than four guys. I would say they trust the four guys they used tonight and not many more. And if this has gone another inning and Trinan had shut the door, somebody else would have given up the next run. That's just how I saw it.
I think Jake McGee is kind of important for them, though. I think if you look back at the regular season, he had a 41.8% strikeout rate, which is just outstanding. It was the highest on the team by a decent margin. He kept the walks under control throughout the regular season as well.
Was the best of his career almost.
Yeah, he came back and had a very resurgent sort of season. So he's an important piece for them because they don't have that depth. And he could come through. But what I think we're maybe overlooking with the Dodgers bullpen, or some people are overlooking, is that for all the guys they have who come in and throw hard, they don't miss that many bats. The K rates are so much lower than you'd think with this group. I mean, you go to a guy like Joe Kelly, throws hard, 21.4% K rate. Not that good. Blake Trinan throws hard, 20.6% back in the regular season. Even Dustin May, who we like.
Yeah. Average is like 22.
Yeah, it's just like that's nothing special, especially for the stuff that these guys bring to the table. Gratterall, 14.8% in the regular season. That one's even more puzzling than May. Like, I know the fastball is pretty straight, but how is he not missing more bats than that? Like, contact's going to come back to bite you. We talked about how important making contact was earlier on in the postseason. There were a lot of teams with high strikeout rates as lineups. It did not treat those teams well moving through the first couple rounds of the postseason. You know, the Rays have been an exception to that. If you're allowing a lot of balls in play in the late innings, bad things can and will happen to you. I think that's where the chink in the armor for me is with this Dodgers bullpen not being overpowering. They have good results, but they don't do it in a way that just keeps teams completely quiet.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, it's that fine line of error, right? Like that fine margin. Nobody can be off because they don't have enough bodies. Like Eno was saying, they trust these four guys. Well, guess what? The Rays trust like six or seven. So they're throwing a party when Charlie Morton and Blake Snell go five innings.
I guess five, yeah, exactly.
But with
yeah.
Walker Buehler, it's like, wait a second. We're not set up for you to go five innings. We need you to go more than that. The Dodgers are not set up that way.
It's really interesting when you sort by K minus BB, you get the Dodgers high, but it's because they had the best walk rate in baseball. It's not because they had the best strikeout rate. In fact, they had the 13th best strikeout rate as a bullpen, and it was kind of a homer suppression play. I think that is one thing that you do miss when you talk about Gratterall, Trinan, and the group. They should suppress homers because they have this lateral movement, they have the high velocity. They should suppress homers, and they did in the regular season. And so maybe that's the play. But I think when you get to the postseason, you're talking about the very best hitters, and you're talking about that fine line that Britt's talking about. You know, just like that one thing that can go wrong. And today for Trinan, it was leaving the sinker up maybe 4 inches, 5 inches over where he wanted it to be. And that was it. That was it for the game. Riley, though, you know, he kind of strikes me as almost like a future Ray, because everyone's going to think about his negative parts, you know, not that great defensively, you know, not that great walk rate. You know, like there's question marks about him. I think the Braves were smart to hold on to him. There was all these rumors that he was in talks for, like, we were sending him on this podcast. We were sending him to Cleveland to get them a starter. And maybe the Braves were right to hold on to him because he has that sound, as I said on Twitter today. He has that, you know, there was a Arizona Fall League game where there was a hitting group with Ronald Acuna Jr., Austin Riley, and the Red Sox second baseman. Michael Chavis. And yes, these three guys aren't going to the Hall of Fame. Necessarily, maybe one is. It's probably not Chavis. Sorry, I don't know why I said that.
Totally unprovoked.
Totally unprovoked. I'm mad about some fantasy stuff, I guess. But anyway, they had the sound, man. Like you could turn around and just hear the exit velocity coming off their bat. So that's what people saw today. I think Riley definitely has that sound.
Well, speaking of the sound, how much money is Ozuna going to make as a free agent this year? I mean, his bat just stays in the zone he just always seems to deliver, right? Like, I'll be honest.
They had a really cool slow-mo where it looked like his bat was, like, you know, level through the zone the whole way on the double.
Yeah. Like, I'll be honest. Nice. I did not watch the Braves for a large chunk of time because I cover the Nationals, and you can only watch one game at once a lot of the time. But, like, this postseason, it just seems like he constantly dials it up, right? Like he gives them big at bats. He's just like he's just this terrific. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Nelson Cruz in that, like, how old is he really? Does anyone really know? He's an older guy, right? Like, but he just always seems to give them these at bats. And Freddie Freeman, I know that he gets a lot of attention, but it just doesn't seem like he gets enough attention as to how good he truly is, right? Like, I know this year was this big, you know, NL MVP push. But I think when you watch him and you watch what he brings to that Braves team, he's so clearly the leader of, like I said, a really fun, talented, ridiculously deep lineup that I was kind of disappointed tonight watching the Dodgers, because I was kind of looking forward to these at-bats from both of these lineups, you know, seeing a lot of really good hitters, a lot of really good battles. And I felt like the Dodgers lineup, and obviously credit to Max Fried and the bullpen with Atlanta, but the Dodgers lineup is going to have to wake up here a little bit, because if they do have this fine line for their relief pitching, then they're going to have to start scoring runs. And Clayton Kershaw this year in the postseason has been great. And how frustrating would it be if all of a sudden the Dodgers' offensive woes, their demons of playoffs past, come back here at the most inopportune moment?
I'm a little bit less worried for the Dodgers as I was, say, after game one for the Astros, because, you know, so much went right for the Astros. And this one, you went toe-to-toe with Max Fried, their ace, you know, and there is a sizable drop-off. I think even to Ian Anderson, as much as Ian Anderson can be, looks like he's good, like there's still, you know, the question of how much the league has adjusted back to him, how much the Dodgers may have, you know, spotted what they can do. There might be some game plan that can get to Ian Anderson that hasn't been shown yet. So there's that. And then I'd say Kyle Wright is going to have a hard time against the Dodgers. I think in the Zoom today, we kind of gave them Kyle Wright. I would not give them Kyle Wright. I would say the Dodgers are very heavily favored to win games 3 and 4. So if they win the next one, they could be up 3-1. You know, by game 5. So I'm not going to shut the book on the Dodgers just because Jake McGee and Blake Trinan weren't great tonight and the offense didn't get going. I think, you know, the Braves show their A team in terms of pitching. They're going to have to show B and C eventually. And I think the Dodgers will come through on that. That's one thing I agreed with Pedro Mora. He's just like this depth, the guys 20 through 28 on this roster are better than anybody else in baseball. And I think that's probably true. The Rays might have an argument with similar depth, but you know, that's the kind of thing that the Dodgers do. Star power plus that awesome depth.
On what other team would Gavin Lux not be on the LCS roster? I mean, that's ridiculous depth.
It's a good point.
Look at Kike, man. Kike seems like an afterthought when you think about the Dodgers, and he comes in and hits a big home run. I mean,
just keeps,
you know,
crushing against lefties. I know statistically lefty mashers aren't necessarily backed up by the numbers. I know that's a contention that our friend Dirk Cardy makes all the time.
Yeah, but he's good enough that if you give him the extra lefty boost, yes, there is a platoon boost. So He's good enough normally that if you give him a little bit of a lefty boost, he's a good hitter that can play any position and gives you this awesome versatility where you're just like, oh, we're going to move this guy here. Taylor comes in, this guy moves here. And, you know, like it's pretty awesome to have a guy that can. He's played, I think he played 9 positions 1 year.
And he was sort of like a tertiary piece in some massive trade.
He played 8. I think he threw 1 year. He threw off the mound 1 year, so he did 8.
He can do pretty much everything. It's a nice piece to have, and the Dodgers have a couple guys like that. One other thought here, if the Dodgers get into some trouble, if Kershaw's pitch count gets run up, what's the plan? I mean, do you run a lot of the same relievers out there in game 2? Dustin May, probably you back off him for 2 and come back with him at some point in 3. Like, what's the sort of desperation level if things don't go as expected with Kershaw getting deep into the start in game 2?
Well, you'll see Joe Kelly tomorrow, won't you?
Oh, man. Nobody.
Am I supposed to look forward to that?
you asked.
He has great stuff. No, I do wonder. I think that the in case of emergency break glass situation is Tony Gonsolin. But if you use Tony Gonsolin, then you use Tony Gonsolin and Dustin May, and you have 3 starting pitchers. That means a bullpen day, and all of a sudden you've seeded your advantage in game 4.
Right. So, I mean, it's important for Kershaw to get deep into the start and to take some of the pressure
deep,
off
like
the pen based on the other games.
Deep. Like 5 or 6.
Not five.
Though. They can't absorb another 5-inning start. I don't think they're built like that. He needs to go 6.
It'd be rough.
I would say at least 6.
Looking at the other matchup real quick, Yarbrough versus Urquidy is the Rays-Astros matchup. The game times Tuesday, are just absurd. We have a 6:05 Eastern and an 8:40 Eastern, and the Dodgers are playing in the early game. What happened? Did somebody make a spreadsheet error and then hit send? And they're like, well, that's what we said we're doing. So that's what
we're
doing.
Are they repeating the error by doing that again for game 4?
Yes. Why couldn't they keep it the same? Is Yarbrough, is he an opener? Are they using him as an opener tomorrow? You know, do you know?
Is it like some sort of punishment for the Rays for using an opener in the postseason?
Right. They're like, oh, well, this.
I would assume Yarbrough just goes, you know, 3, 4, 5 innings, whatever he's able to do effectively.
5? Jeez. If he goes 5 innings again, then the Astros are all done. If he cruises through 5 innings, then they get another 5 inning start from a team that used more innings this year from their bullpen than from their starting rotation. It really is all coming up Tampa Bay Rays.
I mean, this game should favor the Astros, right? Urquidy's better than Yarbrough, no?
Yeah. I
think normally, he would be. This year, he just hasn't been. He just hasn't quite been the same guy we saw
last
year.
That's true. He had the COVID, but I thought he didn't.
The COVID.
He missed a lot of time.
Don't get me into my nicknames for it. I heard he'd lay those on you. But late in the season, he had a good start to finish. His last three starts, he had 14 strikeouts in 20 innings. Yeah, I guess that's not great, but he didn't give a bunch of runs or anything.
76 and 79 pitches in his postseason starts so far, so should hopefully, for their sake, go about five or so. I think that's a pretty even pitching matchup, Yarbrough and Urquidy. Obviously, Kershaw versus Anderson, hard not to pick Kershaw in that spot, but a great test for Ian Anderson, who has borne the brunt of the Braves not really being tested to this point in the postseason. Any other thoughts from you guys, either on the games we saw on Monday or the games we're about to see on Tuesday?
These are going to be great series. I think we said that after we saw one game, but now that we've seen three, you could say with a little more certainty that these are going to be really good series. If you like baseball, this has been a really fun postseason, and it is not disappointing. It always kind of sucks when you get to these big rounds and all of a sudden you got a team that's way better than another team. And I don't think that's the case here. Even though the Astros are down, like we said, they very easily could have been up 2-0. So, you know, I hope that we get a little more of a series and that Tampa Bay doesn't run away with this, you know.
I expect the Dodgers and Astros to win tomorrow and reflect, like you said, the closeness of these series. Also wanted to pimp something. I got a piece coming out tomorrow. Randy Arozarena, the Randy Arozarena Experience. It's got some fun stuff in it, but it also gets at the question of like how sustainable this is, because it is a hot run, but I don't think it's like Cody Ross or Marco Scudero or, you know,
wow.
Eddie Perez had this one NLCS that was just legendary, but I think there's something that's really cool that I found about the way his strengths line up with what the league's trying to do. I'll leave a little intrigue on the table. I'm going to show a little thigh, but not all. And hopefully you like my combination of heat maps
and sexual innuendo.
Maybe that'll get a sub out of you. But if not a sub, at least a rise.
So you're going to show us the lower third of a heat map in an article about Randy Arozarena tomorrow on The Athletic. All right. We all got that to look forward to. It's $1 a month, theathletic.com/rates.
It's $1 for the rest of the heat map.
Jeez. For the rest of the thigh.
$1 for the first heat map and $1 for each additional heat map. Those were the days. I'm looking forward to the games on Tuesday. If you're enjoying this show on a platform that allows you to rate and review it, please take a moment to do that. We greatly appreciate it. We did confirm my dad does not listen to the show. I didn't get a text from him today.
Mine neither.
He's nowhere to be found. So there's always next week. And I think I'm going to bring back another round of trivia for you guys on the Wednesday episode. Try to raise a little more money for charity if you want to see what that's all about. I've got the tweet pinned on my Twitter page, @DerekVanRiper, trying to raise some money for the American Cancer Society. October, of course, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, as always, you can reach us via email, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com. On Twitter, she's @Britt_Giroli. He's @Enoceris. I'm @DerekVanRiper. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.